focusing on ADS CFT, but there's different ways in which you can modify this theory. So, for example, the first case is to change the compact space from S5 to some other compact five-dimensional manifold, and that would modify your dual gauge theory in some way, which I'll describe. Then ADS5 cross S5 is the specific example of n of a large number of D3 brains localized to some transverse directions. But you can generalize that and talk about brains that have a different dimension, which is why I wrote P. And another one is that you can talk about brains in M theory and the dual gauge theory there. So, okay. So I'll start with ADS5 cross X5. Okay. So if you modify this, let me say it a different way. The ADS5 has the group of isometries SO4, 2. Okay, and this is exactly the group of isometries of the dual of a four-dimensional CFT. So if you change, and that's why you can say that ADS5 is due to a conformal field theory. But the question is which conformal field theory? And that's sort of depends on the compact space. So in normal ADS5 cross S5, you have S5 has the group of isometries SO6. And it so happens that N equals 4 super Yang moles has the R symmetry between its super, what's it called? Supercharges as an R symmetry relating its supercharges. QAA dot, which is also SO, which is SU4, which is equivalent to SO6. Okay. So if you were to change the compact space from S5 to some other space, it would change the group of isometries relating your supercharges. And in general, you're going to lose some of your supersymmetry. So you won't have n equals 4 super Yang moles anymore.
Can I have a question?
Yes.
So this always bothered me, and I'm not sure if you're able to answer this, but SU4 and SO6, you're having a compact and non-compact.
Sorry, say again.
One is compact, the other is non-compact. Does this make any
problem? It's just a local isomorphism. It's not a global problem. SU4 is like a double cover.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, SU4 is isomorphic to the spin 6 group, but the spin 6 group is a double cover of SO6. So it is only a local problem.
Okay. So, right. So you can substitute S5 for some other one, for some other manifold. And this was first looked at by Klebanov and Witten in this paper, if anybody's interested. Okay. And so one way to change that manifold from S5 to something else is to change the space on which you place your D3 brains. So it's usually in flat space in the case of ADS5 plus S5, but you can change that. And the way that they consider changing it is by placing it on a space with a conical singularity. So you cut out a wedge of the space and glue them together. So you get a space that has a conical singularity. So if you go around the singularity, once you go less than 2 pi, and that causes a change in the curvature, not locally but globally, and that changes the manifold from S5 to to some color BR manifold. Which is also five-dimensional. And, well, it's five-dimensional. And it has a group of isometries across. Okay, so it has fewer dimensions than SO6, so that means that you have less symmetry between your supercharges in your dual field theory, and therefore fewer, less supersymmetry. In fact, the the dual field theory is then n equals 1. Yes, but the group of isometries, the R symmetry of your supercharges isn't this exactly. It's actually any questions relating to this? Anything that I said that isn't clear? Okay, well.
So this would be more symmetries than the SU2 crosses U2 over U1.
No. I didn't actually read what the reason was for this change. I just basically copied it down.
But
okay.
I think that from the supersymmetric perspective, you have a U1 symmetry that gets broken because in n equals 1 supersymmetric Gibbs theories, you have Cauchy-Gino condensation, and the only R symmetry that remains left is the set 2 of the Cauchy-Gino condensation, because you can have the two Cauchy-Ginos to go to minus the Cauchy-Gino. I think this is a kind of symmetry break from the supersymmetric point of view.
So next I'll look at DP brains. Okay. So well, in this case I'm going to look at a stack of DP brains. And there's n of them and they're localized in flat space. Well, the string theory off of these brains has the low energy effective action Okay. So this is the low energy action in the string frame. You have three different things. You've got R, which is just your usual Ricci scalar of your supergravity space. Because we're looking for a supergravity solution to this action. You've got E to the phi, which is your dilaton field. And your dilaton field is also an effective string coupling. And you've got this 8 minus P form F, which comes from the what is it? From the P plus one form coupling. Oh no, the P plus one form potential that couples to your DP brains. Okay, so yes, so this is F 8 minus P is equal to star of F P plus 2, which is equal to D of C P plus 1, the potential that couples to your P brain, PP brain.
Is there a reason to write F 8 minus P here instead of F P plus 2? That can be more natural.
Well, when you're going to get the flux of your field strength, you're going to integrate over an 8 minus P dimensional manifold. So I guess that's the reason. Okay. So this is the field strength. Coupling to the DP brains. Right, so is there something else I wanted to say? Okay, so this action isn't general. You're making some assumptions. One of them is that you only have the Ricci scalar to the first order. So you're implicitly assuming that R squared and higher orders of R is going to be small. And so we're going to get a supergravity solution, but that's only going to be valid as long as your Ricci scalar is small. Sorry, I'm just going to go to this one. Okay. Okay, so everything I wanted to say about that. So you can take that action and you can vary it and you can get the equations of motion. So Right. So, okay. Okay, so you get this equations of motion. You also get Klein-Gordon equation, which I'm not going to write down now. Oh, yeah. Okay, so you can make an assumption for your metric, which is going to be it's all the other indices. So you're making this assumption for your metric, for your metric, assuming that FP only depends on one transverse coordinate, because these directions are along your brains. And these ones are perpendicular to your brain. Okay. Yes, and assuming that these FPs only depend on one coordinate transverse to your brain, you can solve for the function F, and it turns out to be you can write this part of the metric as dr squared plus r squared d omega 8 minus p, like that. Right? And this is just the line element on a 8 minus p sphere. Okay, so then you get the solution for F, and it turns out that your dilaton also depends on.
And what's the RP then?
Sorry?
RP.
RP is a constant, which I'll write down now. You get that the dilaton is equal to P to the power. And RP is a constant depending on a bunch of things. N, the number of DP brains in the stack, and then some other constants. String coupling, the length of the string. And again, and a numerical constant. I wrote it this way because this part is going to be your Yang-Mills coupling squared. in the gauge theory that lives on the brakes. Does everybody, can everybody still see what I'm writing? Okay. Right. So that's the solution. Do you want to know what dp is? Because I could write it down.
Is it just a number? Or?
It's like pi's and 2's and gamma.
How about n? Wouldn't you include that in the angles coupling or no?
Well, the way I'm writing it is that your Yang-Mills effective coupling is n times g angle squared.
Oh, okay.
It's just the way I'm writing it. Yes?
Is f 0 or is it proportional to n times
odd? Oh, right. So also you get that the integral over this part of the metric of the 8 minus p sphere of this metric of f 8 minus p is equal to 2 pi times n. Okay. Right, so then you have the solution, and you can take the near horizon limit. So you can go close to the brains and see what the throat geometry of the supergravity solution looks like. Okay, so. Yes, so you take the limit r goes to 0, then fp becomes p over r to the 7 minus p over 2. Okay. And your metric becomes it's equal to so this is not ADS5 process 5, because you can see that unless you make a special choice of P, the R in front of this sphere is not going to cancel. So its size is going to depend on R. So you can make the choice P equals 3. In which case it becomes this is ADS5 symmetric. So you can see in by looking at it this way that it's not the usual metric. It's the where you have the usual metric is of ADA space is L squared over Z squared dxi squared plus dz squared. Okay, so here you have R at the top and at the bottom, and you'll have to make this change of coordinates Z is equal to over and that would give you this metric. So by looking at it that way, you can see that R3 is equal to your ADS radius when you make this, take the limit p going to 3. Okay, and you can also see that your S5 has the same radius as your ADS space. And if you look at another thing, if you take this near horizon limit, your dilaton becomes And if you take p going to 3, then e to the phi is just equal to 1. Okay, so you can see that the dilaton is constant in the ADS5 process 5, okay? So that means in the entire bulk supergravity solution, the string coupling is constant. So e to the phi is always small, and for that reason, it's always the throw geometry is always valid. So you can basically assume that your strings are freely propagating in the entire bulk in ADS5 process 5. But that is not the case for general P. For a different value of p, e to the phi is going to change depending on the value of r. So if you go in the wrong direction in your bulk, the string coupling is going to become strong, and you can't make the assumption that you have free strings in the third geometry. So then your supergravity solution becomes invalid. And so you have this, and you also have that your Ricci scalar is proportional to 1 over string length squared times so for the supergravity solution to be valid, both of these quantities need to be small. And I will get to those limits in a second. I haven't said anything about the dual gauge theory yet, and I'll say that now. Well, the fact that ADS5 process 5, that we talk about the supergravity solution being valid for all values of R, is like saying that your gauge, it's due to the gauge theory for at all energy scales. Now, I did say that quantity is equal to your Young-Mills coupling, so I'll just write it down again. So you can see that your Young-Mills coupling has units of length, or let's rather talk about units of energy to the 3 minus p. Okay. So when p is equal to 3, you see that the coupling is dimensionless, like you would expect for a theory that for a conformal field theory. So your coupling doesn't scale energy. But when it's not equal to 3, then you get dimensionful coupling. If when p is less than 3, you get that it has units of energy to some positive power. And that means that it's a relevant coupling. And when p is bigger than 3, you have e to some negative power, which means it's an irrelevant coupling. Okay, so what you can do is you can write an effective coupling for your gauge theory.
Sorry, maybe I'm confused, but I thought relevant and irrelevant refers to the infrared, right? So to low energies. So the relevant things are those that grow at low energies, and the irrelevant ones are those that go away at low energies, unless I'm mistaken. But this seems to go the opposite way.
Relevant couplings are big at low energies.
Yeah.
And if you write down an effective coupling, you can write the effective square as being equal to some n times your Gn moles times some energy scale, about 2 minus 3, then you see that this quantity is dimensionless, and then at low energies. So if you have p less than 3, then this is a negative power and at low energy.
Yeah, okay, so that's the thing. So you just have to interchange those two, right? When you wrote P less than 3 proportional to E to something, it's actually 1 over E to something.
No, the dimensions. If P is 2, then it's the dimensions of G angle square is 1, which is bigger than 1. So that's what I meant when I wrote this. It has powers to. It has its energy to a positive power. It has positive units of energy.
Oh, okay.
That's what I mean. Okay, so and we can choose an energy scale that is relevant. Well, not relevant, that is appropriate. We're going to say E is equal to R, our radial coordinate in the metric over length squared, so that it has units of energy. Right.
By R you mean RP.
That's
Sorry?
R, you mean RP? That
RP? No. No, it's the, because remember when you sometimes people talk about the boundary of ADS space being like the UV cut or the UV limit of your gauge theory. In the same sense, I'm using the radial coordinate as a kind of energy, but
so
it has units of length, so I have to divide by.
So can you think of it as the mass of the, say, mass of the space thing? So when R is equal to zero, it would be.
I'm not sure.
I'm just trying comparing it to ADM mass. Hence energy.
Okay.
Well, that's energy in the gauge theory.
Yeah.
Meaning the energy scale of the gauge theory is related to the position in the radial direction in the gravity of the ground. It's not ADM mass. It's not the mass of the gravity of the ground.
Okay. So now I have an effective coupling, and so now that I've talked about the gauge theory, I'm going to talk about the limits of R and E to pi again. You have that, so you've got a special range for R where R needs to be, where E to the pi is going to be small and where R, your cap, your Ricci scale is going to be small as well. And that then you can trust your supergravity solution. So we're going to, I'm just going to say that GS times E to the pi needs to be small. And your square times R is small as well. And then just to write down three examples, for the case P equals 2, your supergravity solution can be trusted when n minus 4 over 5 times p is 3. Supergravity solution is valid for all values of your radial coordinate, and when p is equal to 4, you can trust between 1 over inside the space-time as your infrared limit in this case, and because that's when your relevant coupling blows up for p equals 2. But when p equals 4, it blows up in the UV limit. Yeah. So so I'm going to focus on p equals 2 now for an example. Other kinds of arguments can be done for different p. But we want to know, well, what happens to your field theory in this infrared limit? Or what happens to your supergravity solution in this limit? Because your strings now become strongly coupled and you can't trust your supergravity solution anymore, but maybe there's a way you can extend this. You can extend this to say something about your dual gauge. And this is where I start talking about M theory. Okay, so M theory is an 11-dimensional theory, which where your objects in a theory don't, well, there's no coupling, between objects. And in the low energy limit, you get an 11-dimensional supergravity. With 32 supercharges. And now, in this theory, you do get, there is known to be a potential, a free-form potential. Which I'll call CP. This is not to be confused with the potentials and field strengths that you talked about when Rob talked about type 2 string theory. This is a different, this is something that belongs to M theory. And I'll show you how you can get the string theory quantities in a moment. Okay, so you have this three-form potential, but giving you a four-form field string. Which couples to.
Is this a three-form potential? Then when you reduce it to string theory, is the NS the Nevel sparse gauge field?
In a certain limit, which I'll tell you. So this gives you. So this couples to. To a two-dimensional ring, called an M2 ring, because it's an M theory, it's the theory. And there's a dual to this four form, which is a seven form, because you've got 11 dimensions. Seven form field string, which is supposedly couples to a five ring, which we'll call M5. You won't go deep into any M5s.
Supposedly couples.
Well, as far as I understand.
Dismissing it.
Sorry?
Sounds funny to say supposedly couples.
They
both couple.
Right. Well, as I understood it,
it's okay.
It's not It's not known absolutely that M5 brains exist.
Oh, come on. No way. They exist as much as M2 brains and as much as all the deep brains history here. It's not getting philosophy. What is not known is the Wollin theory of the M5 brain, but not the fact that it couples to the supergravity
quantum
field. That's a separate issue. I mean, it's not that it's not known whether there is a field theory, it's not well known how to describe it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a separate issue.
Okay. Right, and that would then be the so this field string could come from a 6-4 potential. And I'll just say if we say that the G4 couples to M2 electrically, and the G7 couples to the M5 electrically. But in a dual way, the M5 then couples to the G4 magnetically. And vice versa like this. That understood. Well, it's just words, so it's not very cool. So we want the 10-dimensional string theory. And you can get the 10-dimensional theory by compactifying one of the directions in your M theory. So we're going to take X10 to get string coupling, and you're going to get type 2A string theory. So this gives us MP is your Planck mass. Right, and it's, we'll see why it's type 2A string theory and not type 2B string theory. And then I have to say something about the string theory of DP brains in general, because I didn't say whether it's type 2A or type 2B. And I should say that. Right, so you get type 2A string theory, and now you can see that it's type 2A is the way that you compactify it. Yes, because x goes from x naught to x 10.
The Planck mass and empty.
Yes.
That's the 11th dimension.
It's.
I'm asking.
I don't really know.
You have a different definition of blank mass and different dimensions. It depends on chi and the Newton constant.
Well, your Newton's constant kind of depends on your string things, which I didn't write it down, but where did I write the action?
But in 11 dimensions, you would only have the 11 dimensional Newton's constant.
Sorry?
I mean, in 11 dimensions, you would only have the 11 dimensional gravitational constant. So the string has to be defined only in terms of depth and the radius that you can talk about. There is nothing else in 11 dimensions, right?
Okay. Well, I don't know how in the Planck mass series depends on the compact application. But I should say that this is equal to. In 10 dimensions, you can get the 10 dimensional Newton's constant, but in terms of the string quantities. Okay, so now we've rolled up one of the directions. One of the 11 dimensions to get an effective 10-dimensional theory. Okay. So first of all, along that direction, there's a gauge field. And if you compact it, so in the 10-dimensional view of things, that becomes a type 2A. Becomes the type 2A one form. Said C for a symbol, so I'm just going to say A. So it becomes a C1 potential. And if you recall.
Change the notation, right? Because you were going from 0 to 10 with 11 dimensions, so probably, I don't know, what do you mean by G11 mu?
Well, yes, so it's a gauge field, and as I understood it, it goes around the 11th dimension.
No, that does not originate in G. The gauge field that goes around the 10th dimension originates from the metric itself. Well, I don't know what this probably means C3 or something, but C3 has three indices, right? So when you reduce that, you can take one of those indices to be the 10th dimension. And that then gives you a two-index P form, which you can call the NSP. Or you can keep all three indices along the string 10 dimensions, none of them along the 11th dimension.
Right.
And that is going to become a Ramon-Ramon P form in string P. But that's all that you can get from the C3. So
yes,
that is one form.
This doesn't come from
C3. No, so the one form A comes from the metric. When you decompose the 11-dimensional metric into a 10-dimensional part plus something along the 11th dimension, the circle that you compactify, that coefficient is going to give you this A1.
Okay. So this is a metric component, basically.
I don't even know what is that. Is it G or C? I'm not
it's
sure.
A G.
What G. Well, but G is having four indices, right? So it's still not clear what is that.
I'm not sure, to be honest. let's just say that.
So, well, if you just write the 11 dimensional metric, G mu nu, with its components, A1 is going to be some coefficient inside that. It's not going to arise from C3 or G4, no way.
Okay.
So that's like a Coulter-Klein vector. If you compactify any some dimension into one dimension less, that's the Coulter-Klein vector.
Okay.
So the one form is exactly a Coulter-Klein vector.
Coming from the metric.
From the metric, yeah.
Okay. So I'll rather write that. Okay, so. So there are Kaluza-Klein modes along that direction extent, and they become P0 grains, so point sources for another, yeah, for this gauge spin, A1. So, these zero grains have a mass that depends on your radius of compactification. So the mass of the zero grain is related to R10, which is also related to string coupling. Then we're going to look at M2 grains and the C3 potential. So there's two things that could happen to an M2 grain when you compactify one of your 11 dimensions. Either it rolls up along that direction and you're left with something that's effectively one-dimensional, or it's in a direction that's perpendicular to X10, and it doesn't get rolled up in your left with something that's two-dimensional. Okay. So if your M2 grain is transverse to X10, you get M2 becomes, in your new string theory, D2 grain. And the if that happens, the C3, the C3 potential that couples to D2, or M2, sorry, becomes the type 2A. Ramond, Ramond, 3, 4. Potential A3. Okay. In the case if M2 has a direction that's along its end, then it's going to get rolled up. Becomes a fundamental string in the new string theory. So it's not a deep brain, it's a string. Now, the C3 coupling becomes a two-form coupling, potential. But the reason it can still be type 2A is because it's then not a Ramond-Ramond form, and the Navochal NS-NS potential. So, in C3, that couples to M2, goes to the form B2, which is B2 is related to C3 by so that's the string theory. I get the string theory out of the M theory. And well, what does this have to do with the gauge gravity duality? Well, there's a gauge theory living on the M-brains, and you can get out of that. You can get the D2 brain theory, right? But now there's a limit that we saw where the dilaton field becomes big, and in that case you can go and look at the D2 brain theory as being M theory that is rolled up in one direction. Now, when the dilaton becomes big, it means that, or you can view it as that radio, that extend direction being rolled up in a circle, but with R being big instead of small and vanishing. And in that way, you can recover the gauge theory. So, strong coupling limit and this corresponds to the infrared limit of your gauge theory living on the B2 brain. Okay, so so that's how you square. Then so then you can look at M2 brains on with one of the 11 dimensions rolled up, but that dimension no longer being small, and you'll get a supergravity solution where there's now a back reaction on the brains. So before we had a stack of DP brains, but the DP brains were in flat space. So you're assuming that the strings that are flowing in the throat geometry don't affect the brains and that the brains are rigid and flat. But here you're going to the theory that's due to the, the theory of the M theory of the M2 brains is actually going to interact with the M2 brains, and it's not going to be static or flat anymore. Right, so then you can, so when you go into the infrared limit of the D2 brain theory, it can be seen as going into the M the theory with a stack of M brains. So get some metric, some supergravity metric that off of those M2 brains, and you can again take a near horizon limit where you get the throat geometry of an M theory close to the M2 brains, and then you do that, you get a supergravity solution of ABS for. Right, and you get this, what you get. And the theory, the field theory living on that, on the M2 brains. Well,
can be a super conformal field theory. Its properties. So, yeah, the infrared limit of the field theory is still a superconformal field theory, but it's not still, because before it was a conformal field theory, but it becomes a conformal field theory. So, it's an n equals 8 theory with an R symmetry. Okay, so okay, and seven of those. Okay, that's not exactly what they say. So you get in the theory, you get seven scalar fields.
So this theory has three dimensions, right? The field theory on the membrane.
Yes.
How can you have eight supersymmetries, eight supercharges? You will have then you will have spin 5 half particles. For example, in four dimensions, if you have more than n equal 4, it's a maximal supersymmetry.
It's three-dimensional.
So, you can have particles.
I don't really know what is the world order theory, but anyway, it's three-dimensional, so things should be different as well. Right.
Yeah, can you have particles with more than 2n1? I guess you have, if you have
h. On the world order, I don't think so. Oh, okay, maybe you want to enumerate the fields, but then more clear. Right, you start writing seven scalar.
If it's going to be, that's all who's going to write down, but I honestly don't know how to get that. Okay, so, seven scalar fields corresponding to fluctuations of this gives us an SO7 symmetry between these fields. And according to
to the nodes. They don't really know where the extra symmetry is going to come from, but they expect it to be from a field along the that fluctuates along the rolled up dimension. Okay. And well, just to make a nice picture, I'll draw like a diagram.
Sorry, but when you say seven scalars, I think probably you mean like in string theory, but this is already M theory, right? So you have 11 total dimensions. The world volume is three-dimensional. So the transverse dimension is eight-dimensional. So there has to be eight scalars already to start with. I'm not sure why you say seven.
Well, that's not... Well,
right, you already went to the limit of M theory, so now we don't care anymore about string theory.
Right.
So I think if you start with eight scalars and then immediately have S weight.
Okay, but that's not...
No, but that's the limit, right? To get to M theory, you decompactify the compactified dimension and then you get 11 dimensional
space. Well, it's still compactified. It's just the compactified dimension isn't small.
Well, strictly speaking, you really have to decompactify it. Otherwise, 11 dimensional supergravity would not be a good approximation. I think that solves this issue. To start with, you have eight scalars because in general, when you get some number of scalars in a brain theory, these are the scalars that parameterize the position of the brain in the transverse dimensions. But here, the transverse dimensions are eight to start with, so the scalars have to be eight. On the world volume theory, they have to be eight to begin with.
Okay, and just to, I'll draw a phase diagram of what I was talking about tonight. For the D2 breaks here. So this is related, so n times this is equal to the effective coupling that I wrote down on that board.
So probably you want to say M2 brain theory or?
Yeah, I'll just. Okay, so for when the log of this is small, is negative, it means that your coupling, that this effective coupling is smaller than zero, smaller than one. So you can do perturbative field theory. So this is just this whole side of this diagram. It's just equal. It's just perturbative. Here, over here, you've got for large n and for large effective coupling, you have the supergravity limit that we started with. So then you have the D2 brain. Now, if 1 over r becomes too small, the dilaton coupling between the strings becomes large and can't trust the supergravity solution anymore. So then you have to start thinking in terms of M theory. for large enough, for large enough, this you get the ABS, ABS for. Gravity. And due to this, or is the three-dimensional superconformal in the infrared limit of your field theory. I didn't say, but this is time A. The way you can see that it's type 2A for D equals 2 and for P equals 2 and type 2B for P equals 3 is just by looking at the potential in the effective, in the low energy effective action that I wrote down for you, that I erased. No, it is. So this is going to be odd for P equals odd, and that means that that it's a field that it, the corresponding potential belongs to type 2B. If it's even, it's going to give you an odd, if P is even, then it's going to give you an odd potential, an odd formed potential that belongs to type 2A. That's how you can distinguish. So P equals 1 and 3 and so forth gives you type 2B string theory living in ABS. Well, in the field, supergravity space, and P equals 0 and 2 and 4 and so on gives you type 2A string theory in the supergravity space. Any questions?